Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker and governors from 30 other states have now said they will not allow Syrian refugees into their states after terrorist attack in Paris. But can governors do that, given the 1980 Federal Refugee Act? To discuss the controversy, thanks to Sarah McKinnon, assistant professor at the UW-Madison Department of Communication Arts. Sarah, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you very much.
I am intrigued by the reaction of 30 governors. Just before we get into the details, can you give me your reaction to, did you see this pushback coming from 31 governors?
It was rather surprising to me. I mean, it seems like political theater in some ways. I know that anti-immigration runs high in some ways in our country, and so I think in some ways we can read this reaction in light of that. So in many ways it's not surprising, but that's a lot of governors.
Yes, it is, more than obviously a majority. Do you think the fact that we're less than a year away from a presidential election, how big of a role do you think that has in the pushback, ma'am?
I mean, it certainly cannot, we can't read this moment outside of that. And so the idea that political attention is supposed to be drawn to this moment and that people are working to create energy around a particular candidate, a particular political party, absolutely. We must read this moment in relation to that.
As someone who's studied the issue of refugees, can I ask you this? Do you feel these governors are overreacting? Because there was a Syrian passport found near one of the bodies of the Paris terrorists, Is there some legitimate fear there or overreaction, ma'am?
I read this as overreaction. I mean, when we look at the range of refugees that come into any country, whether it be France, Germany, the United States, the idea that there may be someone that has other motivations seems to be overblown. I mean, when we look at the statistics, at least in the United States, we see that 700,000 refugees have been given admittance in the United States through refugee resettlement since 1980, and three have been flagged for terrorist activity. That's a really small percentage, a very minuscule percentage, and those individuals have been identified. And so I really think that this is in large part an overreaction, especially in light of the security clearances that every single refugee has to go through in order to gain refugee status in the United States.
I love interviewing professors because they have wonderful stats. 700,000 refugees to the United States since 1980.
That's right.
Which country sent us the largest one? Do you know?
A lot of the largest are from Southeast Asian countries. So, okay. I mean, we in Wisconsin specifically, we talk a lot about Hmong refugees. That's our largest refugee community. Different communities have had waves over the course of the last few decades. So the last few years, we've seen a lot of Iraqi refugees, a lot of individuals from Somalia. So there are really waves, and a lot of it is about what's happening in the world at a particular moment.
And of those 700,000 admitted to the nation and assimilated in the nation, how many have come to Wisconsin, Professor?
About 70,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fascinating. Now, let's read five sentences of the letter that Governor Scott Walker sent to federal officials on Monday. Just five sentences. There are not proper security procedures in place to appropriately background and accurately ascertain the identities of those entering our country through the Syrian refugee program. This deficiency in the program poses a threat to the safety and security of our people. At this time, I cannot authorize the cooperation of our state in any efforts to resettle Syrian refugees in Wisconsin. Our state will not facilitate the coordination or provision of benefits or services for individuals whose presence could pose a potential risk to our people. We will make all efforts to ensure that Syrian refugees are not resettled within the boundaries of our state. Professor, when the governor says, I will make sure that state of Wisconsin agencies will not coordinate or provide benefits or services, what benefits or services is he talking about?
Well, this is a little ambiguous because in terms of the 1980 Refugee Act, most of the services function through the federal government. And so the federal government allots particular amount of money to volunteer agencies, and the volunteer agencies then work with refugees who are resettled to provide a very limited amount of services. We're not talking about a lot of services. So they're given 90 days of support, financial support when they arrive in the United States. They are given money for a plane ticket to the United States, which mm-hmm. they have to pay back later on. And so it's not a lot, right? And so it's very unclear what exactly states are providing in terms of those services.
Well, once a refugee is assimilated into Wisconsin, then at what point can they begin to claim some of the basic benefits, the TANF benefits and unemployment benefits and workers' comp and things like that?
Yeah, so I mean, once they arrive in the United States, they are recognized as legal residents of the United States, but they're not citizens at that point. So when you arrive in the United States as a refugee, you have legal status to be here, but you still have to go through the processes of citizenship, which take a long time. We know that. A lot of also further financial resources, and so many of those benefits are actually not available to refugees when they first arrive because they're only available to citizens of this country.
So the federal government arranges for them to fly here.
That's right.
And then are they interviewed by INS?
Those processes happen before a refugee even arrives in the United States. And so refugees that are given access to resettlement in the United States go through two interviews with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. At that point, the United Nations may say, this is an individual that needs resettlement. And so they work with the international community to find a country that might provide resettlement for that individual. Okay. And then, at least in the United States, they go through at least two more rounds of security clearances. This is with the Department of Homeland Security.
Prior to coming to the United States? Excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah, absolutely. Prior to coming to the United States. I think that point is really important because this is one of these points of contention in the current moment.
And yes.
So the Department of Homeland Security does a lot of background checks. The FBI does a lot of background checks. And then if there's, you know, the slightest little bit of concern, there's even further background checks that are done before a refugee can arrive. And I think it's important also to read the 1980 Refugee Act in light of the 2005 Real ID Act. So the Real ID Act put even further heightened security.
Set the bar even higher?
Yeah, set the bar even higher. Basically said that if a refugee has a connection to a terrorist organization, thick or thin, that they can be prevented from gaining access to the United States. And what we saw with one group in particular, Bhutanese refugees that were resettled in the post-2005 era, this created a lot of complications because what counts as a terrorist organization, right? This is a very ominous kind of ambiguous idea.
Washington has an official list, don't they?
They do have an official list, but it becomes unclear because these are very complex situations, complex conflicts, and very diverse national context. And so in particular for this one group of Bhutanese refugees who had been given admittance to resettlement, there were further complications. And so I think what we can say about the current moment is that the security clearance is very high. There are strict standards. This is the highest kind of investigation and interview process of any immigrant group that we might know of. Refugees go through the highest, most rigorous standards.
So the UN does a first interview, and then two interviews, mm-hmm. and then in our case, the next interview is done by the Department of Homeland Security.
That's right.
And so they would interview the potential refugee, mm-hmm. and then they would search a database. Do you trust databases across Europe and Syria to flag any potential terrorist?
You know, I'm not an expert in security, so I don't know the particularities of those processes. But, you know, what we do know is that these are very rigorous interview processes. So individuals go through a lot of interaction, just like we're having right now in some ways, to see if the narrative that they tell about their life checks out with who they say they are.
One thing that intrigues me is that 31 governors have made a point to say, we don't want our states to have Syrian refugees. That appears to me, well, let me ask a question. Is that an important distinction that they say Syria, no, but other refugees, Libya, yes, and some of these other countries?
It seems like political theater in some ways to me. I mean, we are in a particular political moment, and so I think we have to read this concern about Syrian refugees in light of that particular moment.
Well, now tell us about the 1980 Refugee Act. Does it trump the orders of the 31 governors?
In a lot of ways it does. So, you know, all reading that I've done on this matter really gives jurisdiction for refugee resettlement to the federal government. Refugee resettlement is a matter of foreign affairs. It's a matter of foreign policy. And so when we think about where does foreign policy fall in terms of the system of our government in this country, we very clearly see that it falls with the federal government. So there's that point. And then there's also the point of if a refugee is resettled in the United States as a legal resident, they also have the right to free movement in this country. We don't have border patrol between Illinois and Wisconsin. That's not something that happens, nor am I advocating for that either. And so this becomes a really kind of ambiguous space of understanding kind of where the federal government and the state government fall.
In the past, when the United States has accepted refugees, it's not the first time that this has been a very controversial issue. So has it gone to the courts? Because once we posted your scheduled interview, we got a Facebook respondent who said, in Hines versus Davidowitz, the supremacy, the national power in the general field of foreign affairs, including power over immigration, naturalization, and deportation, is made clear by the Constitution. Now, the Facebook said this is a ruling of the Supreme Court. So has it gone before the courts?
Is that the 1941?
I don't know.
I think that's the legal case in the 1940s. And that is a legal standing.
That's a precedent.
That's a precedent on this matter. Also, the recent discussion, I can't remember what the exact court name is, but it was the one with the state of Arizona about SB 1070.
Yes.
This is also a question of, you know, is it the right, do states have the right to do immigration controlling? And again, in that ruling, we saw the Supreme Court say, no, this is really the role of the federal government.
Okay, now let's go back to the process. So a potential refugee has been interviewed, mm-hmm. given clearance to enter the United States. Mm-hmm. The federal government then pays for she or he to come over. Mm-hmm. What determines how many would go to Arkansas, Mississippi, Illinois, or Wisconsin, Professor?
Yeah, that's a complicated process. So volunteer agencies work with state. So this is perhaps where the states have some discussion and some say in this. Mm-hmm. For example, if we look at the structure in Wisconsin, you'll see that there is an Office of Refugee Resettlement in the state of Wisconsin. They work with local agencies. It's under the Office of basically Family and Human Services. And so at that point, states are trying to decide whether there is economic need, whether a state has the economic capacity to take on refugees. So that's one aspect. The other thing is to see whether or not refugee communities have family connections or community connections in particular states. And so in a lot of ways, volunteer agencies are working to try to make the best fit for refugees. And a lot of times that means trying to connect you with people that you know, or at least, mm-hmm. you know, some people that are a part of your community. And so those are two really big factors in determining where refugees are resettled.
And who's the referee here? Is it the Department of Homeland Security or is it the INS or who?
It's the Office of Refugee Resettlement, and that's it's a federal office.
Is it under the aegis of the Pentagon or the State Department?
No, but it's under the Human Services, mm-hmm. Family and Human Services. But they work closely with the Office of the Department of Homeland Security, certainly in the aftermath of 2011, we've seen a closer connection between those offices. But then they work with volunteer agencies, and these volunteer agencies have federal offices, but they also have local offices. So, for example, Catholic Social Services mm-hmm. will have probably an office in Washington, D.C., but they also have a station in Wisconsin, in Arizona, in various states.
Do these NGOs or these do these organizations like Catholic Social mm-hmm. Services, Lutheran Social Services, do they have to raise their hand in Washington and say, yes, we can help assimilate 500 in Wisconsin, you know, 1,000 in Louisiana, things like that. Do they actually set the numbers, or does the federal government set the numbers?
The federal government sets the number of how many people will be given admittance, and then they work with those volunteer agencies to determine where those individuals will go. And in some places, we might say that there, for example, maybe Los Angeles says, you know, we can't accept refugees right now. We have, you know, too much happening in this moment, and so then they'll work with other states and local organizations to make that resettlement possible.
President Obama's most recent statement is that we would accept, correct me on mm-hmm. the number, 15,000 from the current crisis in Europe, exit Syria and Libya.
The last I heard it was 10,000.
10,000.
Yeah.
Was that just from Syria, or was that from that whole area of the
nation?
That
was just from Syria, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't have an estimate, then, of how many of the 10,000 Wisconsin potentially could be in line?
I don't. I mean, the past experience can tell us that, you know, in the past few years, Wisconsin has received about 700 to 1,000 refugees total, and this is from various countries, and so I would imagine that that wouldn't be a very big number if we're thinking about the total amount of refugees that might be resettled here.
Is my memory right? When we accepted some of the Hmong refugees, and we accept 70,000, did they initially come and stay at some of our federal Fort McCoy, is that the initial place that they would come? Of our military installations?
I'm not familiar with that process. So typically, what happens with refugees who are resettled in this country is that they are given a plane ticket to go to the country or to go to the state and the community where they will be resettled, and someone from the volunteer organization meets them at the airport mm-hmm. and helps, you know, connect them with the apartment that they'll be staying in or the housing that they'll have, connects them with various people, make sure that they know where the grocery store is, and make sure that, you know, they have access to employment and all of those other aspects of life that one would need. I'm not familiar with a separate process where one might be housed at a military base.
What about the language barrier? Does that also fall to the NGOs?
That's right. That falls to the NGOs. The NGOs do a lot of work to make sure that refugees are gaining access to the social services that they need. And a lot of that is volunteer work that's being done. I worked with an organization in Phoenix when I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, the International Rescue Committee. And it was one of these volunteer agencies. And they used individuals like me, for example, to teach English as a second language to refugees that were being resettled.
And how long did you work with that family or families?
Yeah, for many years. I worked with those organizations in doing ESL classes and various other social service related elements and services. And so there's a lot of this is about volunteers helping refugees on the ground to be resettled, to find place, to find home.
If some of the NGOs didn't want to get on the bad side of governors and state legislators and said, we really are not comfortable working with trying to assimilate Syrian refugees, that could be one way that a state wouldn't get any, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I think that that's probably the most feasible way that that might happen, unfortunately.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by, we have in our nation sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
Do they have the ability to accept Syrian refugees even if the governors of their states say no?
So the way sanctuary cities work is that if you are an undocumented migrant in a country and you are living in a sanctuary city basically says that that designation says that that city and city officials won't work with ICE officials, so Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And so this becomes effectively a sanctuary space for you so that you know, you can live and continue to exist in the world in the way that you do. This isn't really connected to refugee resettlement.
That's kind of apples and oranges?
Yeah, yeah.
When the 1980 Refugee Act passed, which gives valid summary, gives the federal government final say?
Yes.
We had none of the technology that we have now. Do you think the emergence of the technology is something that can reassure any Wisconsin residents who'd be afraid of us taking some of these Syrian refugees because of the potential threat of terrorists?
So this question of surveillance, identity checking.
Should people feel more comfortable or reassured that these refugees can be tracked?
You know, I really think that we need to turn back to the question of who is a refugee. You know, a refugee is someone who is outside of his or her own country with a well-founded fear of persecution on the basis of race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a social group. These are individuals who have had to flee their homes. They didn't want to flee their homes. They had to flee their homes because they were going to be persecuted if they stayed there. There was no other option. They are outside of their country, and in looking at the country that they left from, there is no end in sight to that conflict. And so these are individuals that are really some of the most vulnerable of the world. I really think that's what should provide us assurance, right? This idea that these are individuals just like you and me who seek belonging and seek home. And as the United States is one of the originary signatories of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, as well as the UN Convention on Refugees, in being one of those signatories, we also took on the obligation and the responsibility to welcome those that are in need of home and space when that was not possible in their home countries.
So you think then, as a citizen of Wisconsin, that we have kind of a moral duty to accept X number of Syrian refugees?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And this has been the rhetoric that has been used many times throughout the course of the history of refugee resettlement. And in being a signatory, the United States took on that idea of being a country that has a moral obligation, a duty to the rest of the world, to the international community, to take care of those in need of a home.
And so when the governor says they could pose a potential threat to the safety and security of our people, your response?
We all can.
Very, very true. Official federal government policy could be that Wisconsin accepts a few refugees, but if people don't welcome them, that complicates their lives socially and emotionally. So we can't make people accept Syrian refugees out of baseless fear or just because they'll might take, you know, jobs at Americans. Your thoughts on how the federal government may have a policy, but social, cultural pushback would not make it a good thing?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on in pointing that out. So this is about policy, but it's also about a culture of welcome, a culture
acceptance.
And so if that's not possible, that becomes something that we need to also think about and to address. I worked with Sudanese refugees in Phoenix, Arizona, and that was one of the things that we spoke a lot about, of this idea of coming to a country, coming to a state, a community, and really feeling unwelcome for reasons that one maybe doesn't understand at the time, right? Really trying to understand the cultural conditions of a particular place. And so I think that that's also work that we as U.S. Americans need to continue to do, right? Really questioning, what does it mean to be a U.S. American, a U.S. citizen, and what are sort of the responsibilities that means in terms of my relation to the rest of the world and to those that perhaps don't have residence, and also to then think about the relations of complicity, right? So it's not like the United States isn't a participant in the world's politics.
Yes.
And so really trying to understand how geopolitics play out in people's everyday local conditions.
Give us a history lesson again on the Hmong. 70,000 Hmong over what period?
So there are 50,000 Hmong approximately in Wisconsin.
Yes.
70,000 refugees in total.
Okay, thank
over
you.
Over the course of since the 1980 Refugee Act was implemented. Hmong began to come to the United States and to Wisconsin around 1975. We began to see, through various immigration processes, Hmong resettled in Wisconsin. Then in the 1990s, there was a lot of effort to resettle Hmong refugees around the country, but Wisconsin was one of the states that took a number of Hmong individuals and communities.
Is it fair to say that we were fairly welcoming to the Hmong?
I'm not an expert on this history of Wisconsin and Hmong refugees. I think certainly this has been a space of welcome for Hmong refugees, but I know that Hmong in Wisconsin also experience racism and also experience challenge in this community.
I'm going to read three statements by politicians, and I'm just curious. U.S. House Speaker said we should put a hit the pause button on the settlement of Syrian refugees. Your thoughts on the speakers?
So this is Speaker Ryan.
Yes.
You know, this is a place where I think we could see some political movement on this matter. So Congress does have a more power, more enforcement power in relation to refugee resettlement, since it is a question of the federal government. Do I think that that's something that should happen? I think we should question how long a refugee resettlement process takes in considering that. So, in September, President Obama said we will admit 10,000 refugees. It takes anywhere between 18 months and 2 years for one individual to go through the processing, all of those interviews that I was talking about.
18 months to 2 years.
To 2 years. It's a long time, right, of interviews, of processing, of applications. And so that's a long vetting process. And so I think we should consider that also as sort of a pause, right, in terms of one's life. This Syrian conflict has been going on since 2011, and it does not seem like there's an end in sight in the near future. That's a long time to be without home, right, to be away from one's home.
The numbers are staggering.
It's staggering, absolutely staggering.
And we've seen the picture of the dead boy on the beach
at
age three.
That's right.
A statement from President Obama, quote, "Apparently they are scared of widows and orphans coming into the United States. Now they are scared of three-year-old orphans." Can you react to that statement?
I mean, the majority of the world's refugees are women and children. If you look at the numbers, the aftermath of the war typically means that there will be gender disparities in who becomes a refugee. The image of a refugee really is women and children. And so in some ways, President Obama is painting a very clear picture of who counts as a refugee and who we see as a refugee.
Most refugees are women.
Women and children.
Women and children.
Yeah.
Make up what percentage?
I don't have the number off the top
Understand.
Of my head.
Yep. Finally, last weekend, Jeb Bush and Ted Cruz, two Republican candidates for president, "America should give a preference to Syrian refugees who are Christians." What's your response to that statement?
Again, this feels like political theater to me. I mean, these are individuals who are really suffering, who have not had space for housing, not had space for adequate food and water for a very long time in their lives, regardless of what their political and religious affiliations are. And so I think that seems like that goes against the values of what it means to be a part of the United States.
Is this whole issue clouded by the debate over Mexican refugees, illegal refugees, and the 11 million that are allegedly here undocumented? Mm-hmm. Is that getting in the way of the Syrian, or has the terrorism attacks in Paris kind of trumped the, that's a wrong term, overshadowed, taken over the debate, Professor?
It's interesting to think about those two dynamics together, because we oftentimes don't think of immigration and refugee resettlement as interlinked. And yet in this moment, I think we see a real consolidation around the question of all processes of immigration. Certainly the 11 million undocumented migrants that are in the United States is on the front burner of political discussion right now. And so in some ways I do see in this kind of instant moment, this immediate moment, the Syrian refugee crisis taking center stage. But I think we should perhaps think about all of these elements as related and think about the geopolitics of the United States' involvement in all of these situations.
Maybe just one final question. What should Wisconsinites, what's your message as someone who has studied the issue? What should Wisconsinites know or be aware of about potential Syrian refugees coming to our state?
Yeah, I think we should really have a sense of what the process of becoming a refugee is. This is a very rigorous process in the United States, and that over 40 million individuals around the world are displaced, meaning they do not have access to legal status within a country, which means they don't have access to a range of possibilities, work, stable housing, social services. And that perhaps presents a crisis more globally that all of us should be considering and thinking about, right? What does it mean to belong to a country when so many people in the world don't have access to that?
Good advice. Sarah McKinnon is an assistant professor in the UW Department of Communication Arts. Sarah, thanks so much for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.